Hi guys, I'm Andrew Davidson with AsPerMyAbility.com. If you consider yourself a new or experienced board gamer, if you like reading and watching board game content, then AsPerMyAbility may be something to keep on your radar. We publish articles and videos every week ranging from board game reviews to the more philosophical aspects of what it's like to be a gamer. If you want to keep us in your sights, please check us out at aspermyability.com. Our story begins on July 21st, 1861, in Northern Virginia. Wilmer McLean, an elder farmer living on his homestead with his beautiful wife and gorgeous kids, wakes up early to enjoy a cup of black coffee on his patio. That morning, old man McLean stepped out on his porch to find that war had broken out in his front yard. Union General Irwin McDowell and his 28,450 troops, along with Confederate General P.G.T. Beauregard and his 32,230 men, were literally blasting and blowing each other to pieces right there on his property. Unfortunately, Clint Eastwood wasn't around to tell them nasty kids to get off my lawn. And so McLean watched in horror and trepidation as the two sides collided to a tune of a collective 4,878 casualties right there in his front yard. Man, and I thought picking up the doggy doo-doo in the front yard was borderline draconic in punishment when I was a child, let alone dead bodies. Oof. What McLean observed that day, on July 21st, was the Battle of Bull Run, or the Battle of Manassas, depending on which side you were on. Bull Run if you were in the Union, Manassas if you were in the Confederacy. The bloodbath marked the opening shots to the American Civil War, a war that turned friends against friends, brothers against brothers, and Americans against Americans. The war would drag on for 4 years and cost hundreds and hundreds and thousands of American lives. In fact, the Battle of Antietam, fought on September 17, 1862, saw more than 40,000 casualties by the middle of the afternoon. As every casualty was an American casualty, the Battle of Antietam is regarded as the bloodiest day in American history. As old man McLean watched the fighting from his front porch, he quickly made the decision to take his family and, you know, move them away from the bloody war that was to come. He ended up residing in a two-story brick house, otherwise known as the Appomattox Courthouse. 4 years later, on April 9, 1965, General Robert E. Lee, accompanied by Colonel Charles Marshall, arrived on horseback. Now, McLean was there, and he extended his greetings to the two Confederate officers and invited them into his parlor. At about 1:30 p.m., a group of Union officers arrived on horseback. Among them were Lieutenant General Ulysses S. Grant, Major General P.H. Sheridan, Major General Wesley Merritt, Major General George Armstrong Custer, and Captain Robert Todd Lincoln, son of President Abraham Lincoln. General Grant and several of the Union officers entered the parlor where General Lee was waiting. For the next hour and a half, Lee and Grant discussed and came to agreement on the terms of surrender of the Confederate Army of Northern Virginia, which, for all practical purposes, ended the long, bloody war. The Civil War, one of the nastiest periods in American history, began in Wilmer McLean's front yard, and it ended in his front parlor. A large part of the Union victory relied on leadership. It took the tough and intrepid nature of the 16th president, Abraham Lincoln, to stand and deliver the Gettysburg Address, carefully monitor military leadership, and on January 1st, 1863, deliver the Emancipation Proclamation, which states, quote, that all persons held as slaves within the rebellious states are, and henceforth, shall be free, unquote. Now, even though the English Empire abolished slavery like way long before, I still sit, I take a deep breath, and I feel proud to be an American. Okay. So naturally, Lincoln couldn't deliver the 13th Amendment with the snap of his fingers. He had a whole host of problems and loads of help from others. The journey of the Emancipation Proclamation is broken down into the far more detail of names, dates, key players, and so on, in Steven Spielberg's masterpiece film titled Lincoln. I highly recommend it. With the war ending on April 9th, Lincoln was long overdue for respite. As General Ulysses S. Grant once remarked that Lincoln, quote, had aged 10 years within a single year, end quote. Lincoln, now focusing on reconstructing America with no punitive action or judgment against the Southern states, which, you know, quite frankly, was an incredibly bold move. Many Union soldiers and generals who fought and risked their lives wanted to subjugate the rebels, to control them, afraid that an uprising would occur again if a firm hand was not clenched around their metaphorical throats. On April 14th, 1865, just 5 days after General Lee surrendered at Appomattox Courthouse, Lincoln decided to take in a bit of entertainment by seeing a play called Our American Cousin at Ford's Theater, located in Washington, D.C. And it was there with his family in the private overhead box seating where John Wilkes Booth shot the president in the back of the head with a Derringer pistol. He stabbed Henry Rathbone in the shoulder when he tried to attack Booth. Then he jumped down onto the stage, breaking his ankle, and shouted, "Sic semper tyrannis," meaning "thus ever to tyrants." Now, despite his injuries, Booth was able to make it out the back of the theater and make a pretty quick escape on horseback. As to the incident itself, historians note that the people in attendance had absolutely no clue as to what they just saw. Naturally, everyone thought it was some elaborate and bizarre part of the play. Like most people, even those of us today living in 2022, they didn't really assume the worst. When you attend a creative endeavor such as a play, you're willing to succumb to the supernatural and bizarre. You're willing to tentatively clap because it's all a part of the show, right, folks? That is, until the hair-raising scream of the First Lady sobered everyone in the theater. I can see it like a scene in a movie. The First Lady, not visible from ground seating, but her scream filling the space from the windows to the walls. The president had just been shot. Lincoln was pronounced dead at 7:22 a.m. on April 15th, 1865, at the age of 56. It is common knowledge that Abraham Lincoln's killer was a struggling actor by the name of John Wilkes Booth, a supporter of the recently dismantled Confederate Army. After shooting the president and making a quick getaway, Booth was hunted down a few days later and died in a shootout, hiding in a barn out in the middle of God knows nowhere. On the plus side, Booth would have died either way, so I guess I understand his intent on opting for a shootout instead of the gallows. Unfortunately, the way Booth died doesn't play well for a national narrative. A grieving country didn't want to catch word that the brute had been shot. They wanted something that they could witness or see play out in the papers. They wanted revenge that they could feel. Allow me to introduce you to Lewis Powell, David Harold, George Atzerodt, and Mary Surratt. The three men were co-conspirators with Booth. However, the controversy was with the only female brought up on charges, Mary Surratt. Powell, Harold, Atzerodt, and Booth rented room and stayed at Surratt's boarding house. According to the charges, Surratt was privy to conversations by the men at a large round table in her front parlor. Allegedly, Surratt knew their plans and not only kept her mouth shut, but allowed the men to stay in her establishment in Washington while they took their sweet time scheming to have various Northern politicians assassinated. Surratt pleaded that she was just a simple woman running a business and had nothing to do with the conversations and purposes of her patrons. Mary had a few things going for her. First of all, she was quite an elderly woman. And second, it was easy to plead deniability since the only accusations came from the three remaining men. She pleaded for a prison sentence instead of public hanging. If she were to be punished, she, being innocent in all this mess, deserved to at least keep her life. And son of a gun, she won. 5 of the 9 military commission voted to lock her up for whatever time she had left on this earth. The commission granted a different sentencing, though, on June 30th, 1865. The newly established President Andrew Johnson absolutely refused the ruling, saying, quote, "She must be punished with the rest. She kept the nest that hatched the egg," unquote. Despite all pleas and appeals, on July 7th, 1865, all 4 conspiracy members were publicly dropped through a raised platform and hung. The bailiff read out the charge. "The commission do therefore sentence her, the said accused, Mary Surratt, to be hanged by the neck until she be dead at such time and place as the President of the United States shall direct." Other than the releasing of the boards, that would be the last thing Mary Surratt would hear. In Tom Butler's game, Unforgiven, the Lincoln assassination trial, 2 players assume either the prosecution or defense in the most controversial trial of the 19th century, the trial of Mary Surratt. Now, the objectives are self-explanatory. The prosecution works towards a guilty verdict by swaying the military commission, while the defense pulls the rope the other way towards an innocent verdict. From here on out, my review will simply just refer to the game as Unforgiven, not to be confused with the Oscar award-winning 1991 Clint Eastwood movie that, while it's a country western film with absolutely zero bearing and relevance on the game to be discussed, it sure is a fine, fine film. Gosh, I highly recommend it. Anyway, back to our task at hand. First, the presentation. Everything in Unforgiven is top-notch. Cards, there's the juror tiles, the dice that are thick, the board. The artwork is fantastic as it depicts realistic color drawings of actual individuals from history. The board is small, but it looks superb and it's very functional. In fact, the board helps new players with iconography delineating where the pieces go and what particular actions affect specific aspects of the board state. Very nicely done. Now, there are a lot of moving parts in Unforgiven. However, the main mechanism is card drafting from a randomized tableau of cards. Players lay out cards on the table in a very distinct pattern, depending on the trial phase, and are only permitted to draft cards provided the card in question is not buried underneath other cards. Once all the cards are gone, then you lay out the next set of cards. There are 3 trial phases before the game is over. That is, providing a player does not achieve any victory condition before then. For gamers that have ever played and enjoyed Seven Wonders Duel, this process is going to feel very, very familiar to you. This card drafting tableau system is a tried and true method. It makes for an incredibly tight game, as sometimes players have to hate draft cards simply to keep them away from their opponent, but yet losing their turn. At its essence, Unforgiven is a game of tug of rope. Players draft cards to affect the game state in various ways, or if they feel the timing is right, by pulling the marker closer to winning the favor of one of the specific jurors that's been assigned to them. Unforgiven is a tight game that throws players kicking and screaming to suffer the mental slings and arrows of strategically egalitarian moves on their turn. And sometimes, if a player is feeling indomitable or perhaps at the tail end of polishing off a 6-pack, they will make extremely risky plays that may or may not pay off depending on how their opponent spends their turn. Unforgiven is nothing like chess. However, it scratches that same strategic itch in your brain, as players must be prudent and dynamic with their strategy, or else it will be a pretty short game and one hell of an ending to put in the history books. My name is Andrew Davidson. I hope I have given you something to think about.